Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to The Horror Hangout, a podcast where film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time and talk about them. Today's episode is a very special bonus episode, chatting all about one of the films premiering at Fright Fest at the end of this very month. My name is Andy Conduit Turner, and today I'm joined by my very special guest, Irel Anthony Hales, the director of Werewolf Santa, which has its world premiere at Fright Fest in London, Friday, the 25th of August, 2023. Welcome. How are you doing?
Really good. Really excited about Fright Fest, which is 5 days away. What is it? Six? I don't know. Really near.
Yeah, at time of recording and ever so slightly after for the time of you listening, unless you're listening in the distant future, we are single figures now until we get ourselves off to Fright Fest. Less than a week until I get on my train from Scotland and head down south. Have you got a long way to travel yourself?
Nah, Camden Town. So just
walking it.
Quick tube to Leicester Square, really.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, at least you got all those home comforts as well. But So nice. Is this? I know you've been a previous Fright Fest attendee, first time exhibitor. Absolutely. Have you? I know you've had a film that you were part of last year as well, right?
Yeah, last year we had Midnight Peep Show. The crazy film about sexual fantasies that go wrong that you don't want your parents to watch. Sorry, Mum and Dad. I didn't write all of it.
They made him, if they're listening.
If they're listening, because sometimes I know they watch these. I love you both. It's just the genre. And then we had There Outside. We had a film called Heckle. We had, which I wrote. And then we had a film called Blue Moon, but that didn't go there. Sorry, that was at Scream Fest. I love it, and I always love this festival. It's Christmas, as we know. Everyone says it's horror Christmas, so we had to make a Christmas horror film for horror Christmas. Obviously,
you brought a Christmas movie to bring those two holidays into one.
It's just the best event, and you know, all year round, you kind of look forward to it.
So excited to be. It's our first time attending live.
We've
done a little bit of remote stuff before. We've covered it for the podcast. We've been lucky enough. Some kind marketing folks have sent us some screeners so we can catch up and talk about those movies. But this time we all went we took the plunge and we went and we're going to appear live, all three of us, and we'll be around to watch as many as we can, enjoy the atmosphere, meet a lot of people that we've spoken to. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's the main event, right?
Yeah, the karaoke party on Sunday where Paul McAvoy goes crazy and sings.
This is great insider knowledge right now. Like, if tickets weren't, or if passes weren't already sold out, people should be listening to this to get on board. let's before we get into Werewolf Santa, the film of the year, let's go back to you as a filmmaker. Where did you begin? Where did you fall in love with horror as a genre? What got you into filmmaking in the first place?
Actually, there were two films when I was very young. A lot of people cite one of them. One of them was Ghost Watch, and I think I saw that about 10 or 12. My math isn't great on the dates on that. Terrified me, and that lit up my love of the supernatural side of things. And in the monster movie side of things, which is more Werewolf Santa, was the movie that I think played, because I checked the Radio Times from that year, later that night, which was Creepshow. Yeah, and we spoke about this because you just did a thing on Creepshow 2.
Right.
So Creepshow 1, with the happy birthday and the cockroaches, which were so bloody disturbing when they burst out of his body. And I saw that as a young kid. And I thought, wow, these movies are crazy. So you got the ghost stories. You got the monster mashup that was great with Creepshow. And those two things really left a big impression. And then weird things like Garbage Pail Kids stickers dates me because I'm born in 78. So yeah, lots of weird little things like scary kids animations, ghost stories from the Pickwick Paper, even from like the 80s. And just stuff like that, really.
All sort of filtered through and made a huge horror fan out of you. In that case, I could almost say that we did Creepshow 2 this week on purpose to tribute your entryway into horror. Was that creature in that box under the stairs in the crate one of those indelible memories as well that's maybe influenced your werewolf love these days? Oh, that's some sort of yeti, right?
What is that? That's like I always wasn't sure, a monkey or a yeti or a beast or something. Yeah, but I love that. Tom Savini did that, didn't he? Brilliant.
Wonderful. So obviously you mentioned a couple of your films and I see a couple of familiar names that come through them as well. So Blue Moon featured, I've not been lucky enough to see Blue Moon yet, but features one of your stars of your current movie as well, right? So.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot that. Yeah. So Catherine Rodden. So Martin Pick directed Blue Moon, who's a great director in his own right and artist and all around creative. And years ago, we did a werewolf dogging short with Catherine Rodden as one of the doggers. And we do pay homage to that a little bit in this. There is something that goes on, I won't reveal too much. But yes, she was always great. And I saw her in a play based on Goosebumps in the West, not in the West End, it was actually at the Vaults in under Waterloo. And she was such a good actress that I really wanted to put her in as a leading role in something. And when this came around, I thought, yeah, she'd be great in this, kind of doing her Christmas Eve monster chase of a werewolf Santa, because she's got the comedic elements and she can also play drama really well. So it's kind of so that combo.
You brought those two things together. And I noticed when I was looking through the records of a lot of your people, you've got a few like people with a little bit of werewolf history as well, right? One of your male actors as well. Let me pull this up here. Role in Teen Wolf. Mark is in Teen Wolf as well.
Yeah, so Teen Wolf is my favorite 80s movie of all time. It's just an incredible film from 1985. Mark Arnold was the school bully terrorizing Michael J. Fox. And I remember this from going to Saturday morning cinema at the Cannon Cinema in Hastings as a kid. All those great films like Ghostbusters were on. I was really scared going to see Teen Wolf because I thought it would be really scary. But it wasn't, not at all scary, but it's hilarious. And there are scenes in there that baffle to this day. So when he turns into a werewolf, Michael J. Fox, in the middle of a basketball game, nobody really reacts. They kind of go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, let's carry on playing. Wow. It's just like, what universe is that film based in? And it works, you know. And I heard the director with the commentary saying that he realized that people would just have to buy into it and carry on with the basketball game. And the beat weirdly works in this kind of inverse universe. But yeah, Mark Arnold's great. And I live here in Camden and kind of near Belsize Park in the middle of the two, really. And Mark Arnold is based locally. So we'll meet for coffee and stuff. And it's kind of surreal because I love that movie Teen Wolf. So I get to hang out with Mick, the bully from Teen Wolf, on a regular basis.
That's amazing. And I take it as well, like I know you mentioned a connection to Hastings. Is that where you know that's the setting for werewolves, Andrew. Is that also where you know Emily from, or are you also a fan of her movies? Certainly, like I was growing up.
I love Emily Booth, and I love her from Channel 4 shows that she did as well. And I had seen her at Fright Fest a lot, seen her films. I actually didn't know she was from Hastings. We're both from Hastings, and we both went to Bexhill College as well. And we're both in horror, so we're going to have to eventually do a Hastings Horror Festival with all our, like, Hastings set horror movies, because Andy Edwards, a friend of mine, has done one in Hastings called Punch. Shout out to Punch, which is at Fright Fest this year, about Killer Punch and Judy Man. And I told him, you've got to set it in Hastings, because it's kind of seaside town, ghost train, fun fair, sticks of rock, candy floss, all the stuff you want for a Mr. Punch movie. So we're trying to, it's so great. I love Hastings on film, the old town.
Building up a little Hastings horror scene. I think you could, you should really rebrand. I mean, it's been a seaside town for a long time. If you make it like a UK home of horror.
I'd love to.
I'm willing to endorse this. This sounds great.
Yeah.
We've been lucky enough to meet Andy following his part of Midnight Peep Show at last. At last Fright Fest as well. So Punch is very much on my dance card for this Fright Fest. I think, boring admin chat, everybody, I think for those of us with festival passes, I think you have to make your choices for which screeners you're going to on the Discovery screens this weekend. So I've given Ben my list and said, tickets for these ones, please. Oh, so yeah, that's definitely going to be the one watching. I believe that's on Thursday, right? So yeah.
It's going to be fun. Opening night, middle film. We're all going to be there, and there'll be a big party in the Phoenix afterwards. So yeah, definitely come to that one too.
See you there. Mm. So you've done great stuff, and you've gone through. We've talked about your filmmaking history. Let's talk about the film we're all looking forward to seeing here at Fright Fest. Of course, Werewolf Santa. I have a little bit of a blurb before we go into it though. So I'll run the synopsis, and then we'll get into it. So here we go. Lucy has a social media channel where she hunts for evidence of actual monsters, but it's not doing so great with just a few viewers following her disappointing posts. Everything changes, however, on Christmas Eve when her cameras catch Santa being bitten by a werewolf before turning into a lycanthrope himself. As Werewolf Santa starts wreaking bloody havoc in their seaside town, it's up to Lucy and her bickering family to set off on a madcap adventure to save Christmas. What a premise. I'm on board. I'm in.
Good. Thanks. I love the high concept of this. I really wanted to see a film where on Christmas Eve, Santa turned into a werewolf.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it. And I thought, I really want to see that.
And we need more horror genre Christmas films. If for no other reason, then we can finally put to bed the tedious argument of whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not, and actually have genuine horror stuff that's for horror Christmas. Not horror Christmas, horror at Christmas.
I agree. I like that Krampus film that came out. With Toni Collette and people.
Yeah, it's really good.
Really good. It didn't kind of do the business, I think, that they wanted it to, but I love that film.
Yeah, I love a Christmas horror movie. That is a better watch out. Is quite a dark and twisted one as well. Yeah, I love a Christmas horror.
Is that the one when you say better? Oh, no, the better watch out. Is that the one with the kid, the kind of Home Alone?
Yeah, it's Home Alone-y. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, that was a Fright Fest. I remember that.
Yeah, there's some good Christmas horror. Anna and the Apocalypse, a Scottish Christmas musical.
Love it. I think it's a great genre. I think what happens is it lends itself in a very big way. That snow, Christmas trees, the kind of enforced cheer of the season. I think Christmas and horror, to coin this, go together like Jack Daniels and Coke.
Yeah.
Because it's just the most natural thing on earth. To all that kind of crazy build up and everything else. I mean, I love Christmas. I love the movies that aren't horror movies. I like Elf and Scrooge, which is actually quite scary at times. And all of, Muppets, Christmas Carol, all of it. But there is something about things like Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is the best of the Christmas horror films, I think, where that darkness mixed with that overly sentimental kind of vibe of the Christmas period just works really well, that combo.
Have you seen it's like a French horror movie. I think it's called Game Over. It's like
it's great.
That is a wild Christmas
it's
horror.
Really weird. Yeah, I like it. With the grandfather and the kid and the dial code Santa Claus or something.
That's it. Yeah, I think that's the translated like French title, right? Yeah.
Like, the emotions are really good in that film.
They before go Home Alone. Yeah, and there's like just a genuinely, not like Joe Pesci about to talk about like biting your fingers off, like a truly deranged and violent Santa breaking into your house while your granddad is at risk of slipping into a diabetic coma, just to add a little bit of peril to this.
It's great. That's one of the real gems, actually. The French film, isn't it? It's really good. Yeah, but, I like that.
We'll talk about your film, though, like Werewolf Santa. I think in creating what you have here, I've been lucky enough to see it. The team sent us over a preview so we could watch it already. So you'll get no spoilers from me, everybody. But I think what you've created is a very fun holiday movie, perfect for any time of year, but especially as you transition from Halloween towards Christmas, getting it ready. And linking into some of the work you've done in the intro, I feel that fans of the Last Drive-In, watching those movies, great sort of genre cinema to gather around, watch with friends, enjoy and have a little discussion about. I feel if they're coming up with Last Drive-In picks for the end of the year, if you're listening, Shudder Commissioning editors.
Fingers crossed. We love Joe Bob.
And so Joe Bob Briggs does part of your intro, right? We get to hear from him himself.
It was so great to talk to him one day and go through that and talk horror with him. I love The Last Drive-In. My mates and I, we watch it, we get drunk, we order curry. And we love those midnight curry and beer movies, we call them, where they're just fun. So in horror recently, there's been some really depressing movies, which I love, like Midsommar and Hereditary, and a lot of films about trauma and grief. And I think every time those come out, even The New Evil Dead is kind of like that. Every time they come out, they're great. I just also like, and at Fright Fest, you see everything. The ones that are just a silly high concept film. So if you go back to the 80s, you look at movies like Chopping Mall.
You're talking my language. Chopping Mall is one of my all-time favorites.
Troll. Or, you know, any Charlie Band. We love Charlie Band. Puppet Master, all that stuff. And I think there's space to have all the different types of horror food at the buffet, because you've got the very hardcore movies like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, and you've got the grief kind of horror, and then you've got spider and clown stuff and werewolves. It's such a, as everyone says, big umbrella.
Yeah, and that's right. That's one of the wonderful things about horror, that you can have fun with it, that you can have moments of serious reflection, that you can. I mean, horror is famous for holding a mirror up to the societies that we live in and being challenging and confronting in those things as well. But I love it how it's enjoyable on so many levels. And you brought us a fun one here, unless you're about to reveal, actually, it's about commercialism.
Werewolf Santa is the commercial part of Christmas. It's this rampaging thing that happens in December where suddenly it is literally like a werewolf tears through the globe, and it's Christmas and can be destructive or bring a lot of joy. But it's also just about a werewolf.
It's also just about a werewolf at Christmas.
You know, causing havoc. So it's funny whenever you talk about these double meanings and things like that. Yeah, but a Santa werewolf coming down chimneys to eat families alive, because that is the Christmas movie I want to watch at midnight. It's also about commercialism, maybe. In the same way that Gremlins is, I guess. When you look at Gremlins, that's about anarchy and kind of the craziness of the holiday season on one level, I think.
Another great sort of creature feature that Christmas films have. This is one settled once and for all with an official horror director. Gremlins is definitely a Christmas movie, right?
Yes. And I actually prefer Gremlins 1 to Gremlins 2. I know everyone loves Gremlins 2. Oh. I love it too. But the Christmas setting, I think, is the thing that makes Gremlins 1 the winner because of that snow and everything.
Yeah, Gremlins 1 is probably my... I love Gremlins 2. It is the day that there were no no's in the writer's room. Everyone was a yes and man on that day.
Yeah.
But Gremlins 1 is such a wonderfully tight piece of filmmaking, and just, yeah, it's one of my all-time favourites. So on Werewolf Santa, I know this was a film that you filmed during those dark real-life horror days of lockdown, right? How did you find filming under those circumstances?
You're right when you say that. This took a while because we did Midnight Peep Show in between. So although we'd made it, I had to go and do some other things. Since this is an earlier project to Midnight Peep Show. It was tough. COVID was just tough, wasn't it? So when you're filming, there were a lot of daily tests. And what you're doing is you're praying that no one contracts anything. See, you're literally living on a prayer all the time. With Midnight Peep Show, we had the production shut down 3 times in my segment, and we'd survived all the other segments, and then it all kicked off when we got to mine. I was like, shit. See, the budget goes up because you have to rehire everyone and pay everyone, and so it's really hard. But with Werewolf Santa, Christmas miracle, obviously, nothing happened really, just throw us off course with that one. Looking back, it was tough, of course, because it was a lower budget thing, but it was fairly smooth ride. Just thinking back on it, tough every day, challenging, but nothing too dramatic took place to throw us off.
And doing night shoots as well, right?
Night shoots I like because I come awake at night time and it's perfect. I love that. But some people, they don't like that, and you've got to be very aware that you're probably pissing actors off at 4 a.m. when you're doing too many takes or talking shit about something, because they've had a lot of coffee and they get tense, and it can become a bit werewolfy.
Yeah. I mean, like, many ways, leans exactly into the energy you need.
Yeah, but no, they're all amazing. But there were times when they're in a ditch, lying in a ditch in the woods, and beginning to rain, and it's 4 a.m. and you're doing take 8, and you go, shit, this is gonna, let's get this done.
I guess it's the opposite of the normal thing. I know, classic, like, shorthand when we see, behind the scenes or films about making films, like, hey, everyone, we're losing the light. I guess when it's nighttime, just, we are gaining light, and I don't want this is nighttime.
And that's it, and you have to grade it. So sometimes you get a great shot as the sun was coming up, so you have to grade it. It takes ages to match the darkness. But generally, you don't want the sun coming up, and you're checking for that, and you can feel it creeping up on you. So yeah, it's all about, it's the vampire version. You don't want the sun coming up.
Yeah, vampire shooting of a movie. I mean, we can't talk a werewolf film without talking creature design. Which famous werewolves inspired you on this one? What, how did you feel bringing that creature, the werewolf Santa, to life?
Well, I'd have liked a lot more. That's all budget. And we did what we could. And I think his animal movements make up for a lot of it as well. And we do this kind of Jaws effect by having bits of the werewolf here and there where we don't show everything completely. And other times we do. I love it all. Obviously, I love American Werewolf. I love Thriller, best of all. When I saw Michael Jackson change into that werewolf and he says, go away, to his girlfriend. And the way they do that, the way they do that transformation is terrifying. It's a really terrifying moment, and the creature design of that one's really great because he's walking around, and I think in ours he's not actually. He's kind of, he's on all fours, and sometimes he's walking around. So we do a bit of both. I draw inspiration from a lot of the werewolf stuff. I love things like The Company of Wolves as well.
Yeah,
or just that fairy tale kind of world of it, that gothic fairy tale world, and we drew inspiration from that as well.
I mean, okay, so you're collecting, or not quite to the degree that Emily has yet. I've had to check her filmography. So she's done aliens, werewolves, zombies, hell space people, and more so far. But you're not too far behind yourself. You've covered werewolves a couple of times. You've got some folk horror, and what do you officially class the like just spirits, I guess, right? Like
ghost stories and things. But very excitingly, I can announce that we are looking at doing werewolf vampire.
Yes.
And werewolf zombie. And even, sorry, wrong way around. Zombie werewolf.
Yep.
Vampire werewolf. And potentially Franken Santa. We'll get it right this time. And zombie Santa, sorry. Vampire Santa and Franken Santa.
Yes. Oh,
so all of these, yeah, just we had some meetings today about that. That might be a fun thing to explore. We'll see. But they would be fun. Coming down chimneys to wreak havoc every Christmas would be great to send another monster into living rooms.
And this is it. So you can get your checklist of all the different cryptids you're gonna do. We'll be chatting in sort of 2030 and be like, yes, it's me, Bunyip Santa. We've done it. We'll get you for Canberra out here. We'll get them all.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, when it comes to Werewolf Santa, like again, you'll get no spoilers from me, everyone. But I think fantastically crafted Hollywood sort of holiday film that we're going to be able to enjoy. Get everyone round. You know, have your like. I'm gonna borrow your phrase. This is a curry and beer movie that you can enjoy with your friends. I mean, when we come into Fright Fest and we're going to be watching it, what would you hope the audience is? I hear tickets have gone well. They've had to add an extra screening. Is that right? So,
yeah.
So good to see that we're going to have hopefully some full audiences to get and watch it.
I think if I saw Werewolf Santa, I'd really want to go and see that.
Yeah, you don't need any more information, do you?
It's an elevator pitch. We could have called it elevator pitch.
Yeah. So, you know, really good. What are you hoping that audiences that come to see it will get from the experience and they take away from Fright Fest?
Well, I love live cinema above all else. So I think audiences tune into each other, laugh together, gross out moments, they feel it. I, more than any other genre, and festival audiences, the Fright Fest audience is so great. They just love it. They love horror. So you want to deliver. It's always effing terrifying to sit there with an audience, because there's I quite like the second screening, actually, because the first one, there's some, you know, people who work on the film, so they might begin the laughter. Second one, you go, oh shit, these guys, I don't know anyone here, so they might not, you know, react in exactly the same way. So you want to keep an eye on that, and you watch the film through an audience for the first time. Every time you just see, God, every line, everything is just under a microscope. The terror of that is something. Because you really, I really care. I really want audiences to have a good time. I remember Rob Savage talking about how working with Sam Raimi was saying, all this is about at every point is what the audience are taking, what they're feeling. So you sometimes hear that people made a film for themselves or something. And I don't really buy into that too much. I think that can be okay, but you know, if you make something very experimental for yourself, and that can be a beautiful thing, of course it can, but I think roller coaster rides or movies for the mall, the kind of Jason Blum model, the A24, I guess, although I love every A24 film. Pearl, not everyone, but Pearl was bloody epic. But I'm losing my thread here, but basically, yes, you want the audience to have fun with this film. You want them to have a really, really good time. And there's a few curveballs in there, a few things they might not expect, some different emotions come into play in this one. It goes in odd directions. I think we try and keep people surprised at times.
Yeah, I mean, you've really given me a new thing. I can never appreciate this. I've never released a film myself, or anything that I do is like, I never see people listening to it in a live environment, anything that we put out, fiction or factual stuff. But I've only had this as a minor thing. Like when you recommend a film to a friend, or, you know, worse yet, like a partner, and you're sitting there and it's a film you really love, and you're having to like try not to be obvious, but glance across and see if they're enjoying it and a bit you enjoy. I can only imagine what that must feel like when there is an entire room of people who you're trying to gauge the reaction. Are you a front row guy when it's your screening, or do you hide at the back and see what you can see?
Back room, because otherwise I'd just be my neck. I'd be turning around to watch everyone. You sit at the back and you get the vibe. With Midnight Peep Show, it's loads of fun. I snuck a peek through this hole in the staircase. As you come into the cinema, there's this gap, and I watched the audience as they watched the film, and they couldn't see my little eyes.
Terrified of the stairs.
What the hell's that? But that was great, just watching every moment that you write and you direct it, and the team there, Andy Edwards, Ludovica, Jake, West, everyone involved in that, crafted those moments so carefully. So I was watching the audience, and I'll be doing that. I learned so much from that with everything we do. So that's the test. It's for the audience. That's when it becomes real.
What I'm now really hoping to hear is, like, we'll see some new horror directors coming up in the next few years and be like, where did you get started? And it'll be like, well, I was at a screening of Midnight Peep Show. I was just a horror fan. And then I saw these eyes through the stairs. Terrifying.
Terrifying, that is, actually, think about, isn't it? Yeah.
I'll be looking for that in shots of your future movies as well, with just some eyes peeping through little tiny holes in the stairs.
It's a frightening image for sure, that. Yeah.
Grant. Yeah. So, I mean, we've touched on Fright Fest as a festival in your film. We've touched on Punch as well. If you're around town for the weekend, anything else that you're really looking forward to seeing?
Yes, one of my favourite movies is Society. I hope you've seen it. It came out in 1989. Screaming Mad George did the rubbery body special effects. It ends with a scene. The original film Society ends with a scene that is just, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, so effing out there you won't believe it. The whole movie is this 80s orgy of madness, there's a clue. And that there's a documentary, The Dark Side of Society, and I'm really excited to see that documentary. There's loads of cool stuff. Cobweb is a film I'm excited to see, but I think it clashes with a filmmaker's party. So I'm going to find out at cinema.
That's Cobweb's on. I'm not sure I'm in this country yet, but I think American audiences can get it on VOD already as well.
I'm really excited about that. I love the trailer for Cobweb. Punch, yes, from Andy Edwards. My friend Jake West has got that brilliant film, Mancunian Man, which is a documentary about Chris Tremblay. And he made a film called GBH, which is a video nasty, or related to, I think it was an actual video nasty, or related to them, which is a mad film. And I'm really excited to learn about Cliff Tremlow and his larger than life world that he operated in, and how he came up with movies that I haven't yet seen. So I'm excited about that. The whole guide, I went through it, I plan it with my mates, like you probably do, quite meticulously. Yeah. We even plan like dinner breaks where we're going for maybe a curry, and karaoke at Fright Fest is here. So are we going to see that movie there? Yeah. And we have our charts. We're total geeks and nerds with it.
I think that's the one thing I've neglected, is a note to myself watching this back, actually plan times to eat, because we haven't done that bit yet.
Yeah, because you end up with a hot dog from the cinema and you just feel so crap after
it's like... I've eaten nothing of nutritional value. My wife is probably going to send me with some veggies in my bag, so I'm ready. Little lunchbox of carrot sticks. That'll be all right.
That's the one. That will give you the energy, because the cinema hot dogs will destroy you.
Ugh. Yeah. Real life horrors that we're tackling here as well. We're tackling the real issues in this in this catch up. I mean, those are all the main things I wanted to cover, but amazing. I couldn't let you go without some quick fire horror hanging out questions. So are you, as a cinema goer, are you audience participation or quiet as the grave?
Fairly quiet. When you say audience participation, I don't scream much because I don't get that. I do laugh. And then that's the funny one, where you're with someone who doesn't laugh at the same moment. You go, oh,
uh-oh.
It's me then, like you're saying earlier. I try and hold back the tears. I'm about to cry. I saw Up years ago, and Up is the most amazingly emotional film ever, the Pixar film. And the opening 20 minutes of Up destroy me. They destroy me. And I remember being on a date, and I was trying to be confront the girl, and I held the tears back. I was like, why just let them go? I'm going to graduate to letting the tears roll.
Oh, I've been ruined. Off. Yeah, married now, and I think Guardians of the Galaxy 3 got me 3 times. I was wrecked.
Wow.
Wrecked. Damn you, James Gunn.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'm going to participate more. I don't see why not. I don't know why the hell I'm holding back tears.
That's it. I think it's a lot of thing from like British audiences versus you know, European or American audiences. Certainly, they tend to react a little bit more strongly than we do.
They do. I saw King Kong in America, and everyone was jumping out of their seats. The Peter Jackson one, jumping out of their seats and screaming at the screen. We don't do that in the UK.
And you're like, is there a fire? What's
happening? Yeah. It's amazing.
That's like recent watches, though. I'm not sure if you've seen it yet. Talk to Me got some bigger. Cool. I was grasping at my head in that.
Saw it twice. Loved it. My friend Sam Cassidy, shout out Sam, he's a fright fester, didn't go for it, but and we see a lot of horror together. We have nights at Cineworld. We got the free pass. Well, we buy it each month, unlimited cinema, so we see all the new horror. Talk to Me was great. I really liked the weirdness of the premise. Is like a Twilight Zone episode. It could be a half hour thing, but where they go with it, holding that hand. Yeah. And the kind of psychedelic trippiness. I love the central girl's performance. I thought she was great. And I thought the ending was great. And the weird stuff in there, you'll know what I'm talking about, where you see them get possessed and the strange things that they do in the moment when they get possessed. The way that's filmed is really good. I love Talk to Me. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think I've already spoiled some of my. I mean, there's time for others to get on there, but I think my first thing is I came out of it and someone said, "Oh, what was Talk to Me?" I said, "Oh, it's you're going to hear about this when I do my top films of the year, horror or otherwise." It's really, really strong. We've had good films this year, but this has been it's been really good. So, talk to me about your film going snacks. Then, are you a sweets or a savouries guy? You've mentioned curry and beers. Is that your go-to cinema? Like, not cinema, so of course.
In Oppenheim, I went out and got 2 hot dogs. I was really hungry and I came back and I missed a little bit of Oppenheim because I do like one of those evil hot dogs, which are made out of God knows what.
People, I imagine.
All that good stuff. I like sugar and salt popcorn because you kind of, it's good to get through the pain of the salt and you go, oh, sugar. Sugar's kicked
in. Makes the sugar seem better. I feel like I've hacked it when I go, can I have a mixed popcorn, please? As if you're asking for something off the secret menu. It's like,
I know. It's like, yeah, we'll order that from the Twilight Zone for you, sir. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So then ultimately, your beer and you're having a horror hangout yourself. You're having some friends around, having a party. You're going to put a horror movie on. Assume that no one's seen anything. They look at your movie collection and say, I've not seen any of these.
Mm-hmm.
What are you pulling off the shelf to put on for a crowd?
The one I come back to is Extro from 1982. Not all aliens are friendly. It was the tagline, and it was like an evil ET. It's not from 1982. It can't have been. Maybe it was. I can't remember. But Extro's poster is so weird. The whole thing about that film. Because it's a British horror. And I like things like Paper House, that was a British horror. And these weird 80s British horrors, there weren't loads of them. God damn, there's a title I can't remember right now that has Timothy Spall in it as well. And Jimmy Nail and their journalists, another 80s horror. People out there will know what that is when they hear this. British horror, Extro, what a weird film.
Extra is on my watch list right now. It's been on there for a little while. Maybe this is the time to accelerate it.
Please watch it. Tony's dad gets pulled up into a UFO and he comes back and he's not normal dad. And then I don't really know what happens. There's just weird things that go on.
Well, you've convinced me. I think we'll check your availability in the coming months. Come and join us. We'll do Extro together. We'll come and talk through Extro.
It's so good. So that's my film I think more people should watch that film.
Well, I mean, we'll get Extro. And failing that, like, you know, we've not done Society on the podcast yet.
That is the film. And if you can see that documentary at Fright Fest, do. But you've seen the film, right? You've seen Society.
It's so long since I've seen it. My memory fails me. I know the bit you're talking about. I know about the event at the end, but I need a desperate rewatch of it. And we have the we have the documentary to go through on our screeners. Mm. So I think it's next one I'm going to be covering. So I might have to have a quick rewatch of the film first, so I can appreciate it fully.
You'll love it, because when you come back to these horror films, you come back with fresh eyes. You're a different person. So, and you go, what the hell was that about? You revisit them and you just see all this stuff that you can't believe. You just thought that was so normal to watch that.
Yeah. Oh, good times ahead, not only for Fright Fest, but lots of film recommendations to take people away from, especially those of you that aren't anywhere near London next week and can't join us live. Look some of these up and experience it, you know, vicariously through the thing, you know, through the other recommendations that we've picked up today. But in the short term, most important thing, where can people find you and follow you if they want to catch up with the next films you're working with? Where are the best places to find you? Because social media platforms aren't what they used to be.
I'm on Instagram on Black Rabbit Cinema, where I celebrate horror that I love. We put updates about horror that we're making. Find me in the Phoenix at Fright Fest at 2 a.m. with my mates, drinking whiskey and talking shit about horror. Yeah. That is the real Fright Fest.
Are you hitting the karaoke, or do you keep it a secret what your karaoke song is? Are you there to just clap?
That scares me. We did karaoke with some of the Troma gang, One Can, when we were really drunk. I think I'll let Paul McAvoy and Jake West lead that. Let's see.
Watch out for them on stage, everybody, up there.
Woo!
I mean, you've conjured Troma now before we finish. I know it's not a Troma movie in itself, but are you on board for the new Toxic Avenger this year?
I am, if it takes risks. Yeah, I saw the poster today. I love Troma and I love Lloyd and I love the Toxic Avenger. It feels like the new one's very slick from what I've seen from the poster. It may be absolute madness because the first one was, and I really hope it is. Of course I'm excited about it. I'm going to go and watch it, and I hope we always have the original one, which we love.
Yeah, exactly. Those things are never going away.
Yeah, and this is just a new version, and I'm sure it'll be great. Who directed it? Do we know who?
Oh, I'd have to look that up. I'd have to pull it out. I know that we have very different Toxie this time, and I'm on purpose. I'm not engaging with any more stuff. Right. I almost don't want to see any trailers or anything like that. Now I've seen the poster. I know I'm going to watch it. I want to be surprised.
Okay. Yeah. Me too. We'll all do a big event at the cinema for that.
Oh, looking forward to it. Well, thank you again for joining us to talk about Werewolf Santa. I guess the future of Werewolf Santa, if you're not at Fright Fest, will be available on your socials as and when it becomes available, when you know where it might be released more widely.
101 and Trinity have got it, so they should be... Actually, they're releasing it for November, so we've got... Yeah, that's pretty soon. And then over November, December, because obviously they want to get it out for Christmas.
Yes, of course. Get it in the stockings, everyone.
Yeah. Season's eatings, as we say.
Oh, absolute fantastic pun work on there. Getting that on the poster. Perfect.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. I hope people like it. Yeah.
Well, we will see you there, everybody. If you're listening to this, we hope you see all of you there as well.
See you at Fright Fest.
Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.